What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Financially Free Friday episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Today, I have Kathleen Boyd with me, the lovely Kathleen. She joined us talking about 1099 versus W-2s a couple months back. She is back to help me chat about HELP savings accounts, and we rave about those on this podcast. You probably are like, I get it. All right, they're cool accounts, but we're going to talk about some secrets and some tips and tricks and some really interesting things about HSAs that most people don't know about that add to why we love them so much. So, Kathleen, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Megan, for having me. What's up, y'all?
Do you have a tagline yet? Is it going to be, what's up, y'all?
I guess I can make it my tagline.
Now, where are you joining me from today? Because you are someone who is never in the same place.
Yeah. Some of the listeners who might be my clients know I am a digital nomad. So I spend 6 months out of the year out of the country. And so I'm currently in beautiful Medellin, Colombia.
Very nice. Kathleen, you are a CFP. You also teach financial planning, which I think is really cool. And you bring that education into like your financial planning relationships with clients. You were interested in talking about this HSA topic because you've got some fun stuff to talk about. So let's start with the basics. Do you want to, like, everyone probably knows this, but what's the skinny on what an HSA is and why someone might have it and what it's used for?
Absolutely. So HSA is an acronym for HELP Savings Account. And in my opinion, it is likely the most powerful savings tool you could access.
Oof, strong words.
Yeah. What it's designed for is exactly how it sounds. It's to help people who have healthcare costs pay for those healthcare costs through an account that you can make contributions to on a tax-deductible basis. So that's going to reduce your AGI, your income subject to taxes. You can invest the funds inside the account and let it grow tax-deferred, which we'll talk more about that later on in this episode. And then you can pull the money out penalty and tax-free for what the IRS deems as qualified medical expenses. We call it the triple tax benefits. And I think a lot of people know that those benefits have been heavily spouted, but there's so much more to HSAs than just using it for medical expenses. So many different planning opportunities as well as pitfalls to be careful of when you have an HSA account. So I'm really excited to share those little nuggets with you all today.
Yeah. And I like that you say pitfalls too, because there are definitely things that have tripped people up with HSAs where maybe they had one idea, but it wasn't actually how it played out, or maybe something was just the exact right situation. So let's start really quickly. Not that this is a pitfall, but I want to start with who the heck can contribute to an HSA, because there's also family contributions you can make, but maybe your spouse doesn't have a high deductible healthcare plan, they're not on yours. So there's some things that we can mess up here with who can contribute. So let's talk about that first.
Yeah, really important stuff here. So who can contribute depends on the type of health plan coverage you have. So let's say you're single. You don't have a partner, you live on your own. You likely have health insurance, it's self-only. So if you have a policy that is self-only, it means only you can contribute to your own health savings account, and usually at the single contribution maximum, which as of 2025, the year we are recording this episode, is $4,300 for the year. Pretty straightforward.
Your employer can contribute though too, right? They can contribute some. Yeah.
The caveat, yes. So you might work for an employer that offers a benefit where they'll make a partial contribution to your annual limit for the year. That also counts, but it's included as your annual max. It's not addition to the $4,300.
Yep. That's good to point out too. Perfect.
Now, once you start adding family members to the mix, things start getting a little bit more complicated. So let's say you get married, and let's say both spouses come into the marriage with self-only coverage. Because each spouse, and by the way, to be eligible to even contribute to the HSA, to open it and fund it, you have to have a high deductible health plan. Sorry, I meant to mention that at the beginning of the episode. That is one of the requirements. You have to have a high deductible health plan that is eligible for an HSA. Mm-hmm. So let's say both spouses have their own high deductible health plans with self-only coverage. They can both contribute the self-only limit of $4,300.
Gotcha.
Let me tell you why that gets interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready for it.
Yeah. What if you're married, but you have, let's say, separate family coverage, also known as dual coverage? So both spouses have family coverage. Mm. You don't get to individually contribute the family annual max, which is $8,550. You contribute the combined family max. So you both can have your own HSAs as if you had self-only coverage. But as a household max, you can only contribute up to $8,550 for 2025.
Gotcha. And family is considered you and your spouse. Mm-hmm. That could be the family. Correct. So you don't have to have kids to be
correct
looking at that family limit.
Correct. But Megan, in the years, the over a decade that I've worked in this industry, I believe this is the first year that I've noticed that the annual family max for HSA is not exactly double the self-only max. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I knew it was like pretty much double in years past. But this year, what are your theories on that?
I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But it does create a slight incentive for married spouses to have self-only coverage. Mm-hmm. Because if they can individually contribute at the self-only max, they can contribute a little bit more. $4,300 times two, $8,600 mm-hmm. versus $8,550. Now, it's not much. It's only $50. But $50 compounding at an 8-9% return a year becomes more than $50.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. just an observation there. Yeah.
That is interesting for sure. And this is relevant to myself. Like this scenario is how me and my husband's plans operate currently because we're both on self-only. Well, no. You'll have to correct me. You're going to school me today because I'm on the open market coverage. We have a high deductible healthcare plan. He is on when you're on open market and you're married, you have to be on the same plan together. Mm-hmm. And so we both have our own HSAs that we had independently before we were married. Now we have two HSAs. We still have the two HSAs outstanding. So in that scenario, we don't have kids. It's just us. We both have a high deductible healthcare plan. We're on the same high deductible healthcare plan. What is our limit in that situation? Is it
the family?
The family one.
$8,550.
So we couldn't do the self-only because technically, we can't have two separate self-only policies with open market. Okay. So I'm missing out on $50 is what you're telling me.
Small amount, but nice little observation there. And then married couples, let's say one has self-only coverage and the other one may have family coverage. Mm-hmm. Both spouses can contribute up to the family combined, even though the other spouse has self-only coverage because the other spouse has family coverage. As a household unit, they can contribute up to the $8,550 family max.
Okay.
So important to understand these little nuances. It depends on the type of plan coverage you have that will inform the contribution max you can make.
What happens if you accidentally contribute?
So that's an IRS no-no. If you do that, you could be subject to what is called an excise tax of 6%. And then you could potentially owe, in some scenarios, taxes on that contribution and any gains if you invested that contribution.
Gotcha. And they wouldn't recognize that because you'll get tax documents from both of your HSA custodians.
Correct.
It would be flagged. Yeah. So you would be able to correct it at that point. Or whenever someone says excise tax, I think about exercise because it's a very close word. And it makes me think of did you play sports in high school or in growing up at all?
I did basketball.
Basketball. Okay. So you probably did suicides on the court where it was if you missed a free throw or something, it was the whole team had to do the suicides back and forth. So that's what it makes me think about. It's when we mess up with the IRS, we have this excise tax. It's almost an exercise to make you sorry for what you did.
Funny. So. Yes. So a couple more nuances for, you know, listeners to be aware of. I know we would get feedback from our listeners that they want more content geared towards older folks. So I got a couple of tidbits for you here.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a 401k, there's a catch-up provision with an HSA. When you reach a certain age, the IRS allows you to contribute a little bit more to a 401k to help you prepare for retirement. It's the same with HSAs. And I believe that catch-up age is 55. So if one spouse reaches that catch-up age before the other and wants to make the catch-up contribution, which I believe is $1,000 for the HSA, they cannot do it in the joint HSA account. Mm-hmm. So if over the years you've been using one single HSA account to make contributions to the family max, for example, mm-hmm. you cannot put the spouse's catch-up contributions in that family max. In that scenario, the spouse needs to open up their own HSA and contribute. They can just contribute the catch-up contributions to their own HSA.
Mm. So that would make sense then why you could have two separate HSAs, even if you're under like family coverage. Like you may need to have two separate ones if there's an age difference there to contribute more to not commingle.
Exactly. Another not well-known planning opportunity is if you have a grown adult child who's a non-dependent, but they might be on the parents, still covered under the parents health insurance plan, because mm-hmm. I believe you have until age 26. You can yep. be on your parents plan until age 26.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know you can open up an HSA in that child's name, and either they or the parents can contribute up to the family max to that child's HSA.
Oh, so technically for the household, if you're considering your child in your household, you have an even bigger bucket to contribute
exactly.
to there.
Exactly. And that doesn't exclude the family max that the parents can contribute to their own HSA. Ah. This is in addition to that. What a powerful way to allow your young adult children to leverage the power of the HSA and benefit
early.
From potentially compound growth for a very long time horizon.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good tip there. Oh, yeah. That's really interesting. Okay. Because I was one of those people that was on my mom's coverage until 26, because I would have mm-hmm. had to be on open market. My brother and my sister were as well. And man, that could have been, you know, if I knew that back then, that could have been maybe something to consider. But yeah, that's a great way. And people talk about opening Roth IRAs for their kids. So this is almost like even better in a sense, because it's a bigger bucket to contribute to, mm-hmm. right? Because you said the family max,
yeah,
the max that you could do to a Roth IRA is 7,000. So that's giving you a bigger bucket to contribute to than the Roth IRA, but you could also do both. You could do the Roth IRA if it makes sense for the kid, and then the HSA, and really kickstart like their future with savings. Because
absolutely,
yeah, interesting. Okay, I'm loving this so far. Thank you.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
So far, so good. I'm feeling like I'm learning some stuff already. I'm excited. So let's talk about some overlooked strategies, which we've already actually talked about some strategies, which is cool. But let's talk about some other overlooked strategies for funding HSAs.
Yeah. If you're a W-2 employee, your employer may offer what they call a Section 125 cafeteria plan. Open enrollment once a year, you get an opportunity to pick what employer-sponsored benefits you want to have for the year. And oftentimes when folks choose the high deductible health plan, they'll elect the HSA along with it. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes what I see clients doing is not contributing to it throughout the year or waiting until the end of the year, or just kind of contributing to it willy-nilly, manually.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an employer that offers an HSA, you should almost always contribute to it directly through your payroll deductions. And the reason for that is HSA contributions directly from your paycheck reduce the amount of income that is subject to FICA taxes, which is something that regular retirement plans don't do. Like 401k plans, the contributions, you can make a contribution from your paycheck. It's not going to reduce your FICA taxes.
Mm-hmm.
HSA contributions will reduce your FICA taxes, your Social Security and Medicare taxes, which will create slightly bigger paychecks.
Gotcha. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So that should be the priority over manually contributing willy-nilly through your bank account. Mm-hmm. Consider prioritizing the payroll deductions to fund the HSA.
Come tax time, when you're filing taxes, and let's say you were doing contributions just from your bank account, not your paycheck, is that part of your refund when you're filing taxes, those taxes that would have been taken out if it was via payroll?
Correct.
Gotcha. So it's one of those things where it's like you're kind of overpaying throughout the year in tax just to get it back later when it could have just been in your paycheck throughout the year.
Exactly. And in the meantime, paying more in FICA taxes.
Mm-hmm. That's a good tip. And that's also easier. I talk a lot about automation, like delegating things. And automation is a free way to delegate putting money away into some savings account. So setting it up on payroll or like having it come through your payroll deduction, you don't have to think about it. You don't forget about it either. Like you do it over the course of the year versus rely on yourself to remember to make those contributions and accidentally contribute too much or accidentally forget the deadline. So it causes some, it alleviates some, mental, like the mental exertion that you have to have to actually doing it. So that's a pro as well.
Absolutely. We work with a lot of business owners. Me particularly, I work with a lot of physicians and dentists who might be practice owners who are interested in HSAs. And the way they contribute is a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. Say you're a sole proprietor or LLC. If you want to make a contribution to an HSA, you usually do it on an after-tax basis on your Schedule C. You do a deduction on your Schedule C when you file your taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're an LLC, but you've established the S-Corp election, okay? Mm-hmm. This is where things get a little tricky, okay? Because that S-Corp cannot make direct contributions to the HSA. If you open an HSA account and you are an S-Corp owner, that HSA cannot have any direct connection to the S-Corp. You need to open a private HSA just in your name only.
Mm-hmm.
And how to go about funding it is, you can distribute an extra, let's say $4,300 income from your business to help you fund or max that HSA through your payroll. And you get a business deduction because that's salary, right? Mm-hmm. And then later when you file your taxes, you claim the contribution for a tax deduction.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was an important point to note there, especially with S-Corp owners, you have to go about it just slightly differently.
I think payroll companies too, for S-corporations, like if you've got a payroll company like managing that, there is a place where you can input, like when it's a journal entry, but in your payroll software, you could input in like how much you put in contributions to an HSA to make sure it shows up on your W-2 at the end of the year. Yeah, that is an option I know for most payroll companies that I believe. So that might be something to consider is if you are making a contribution for this year, you're an S-Corp owner, you might be able to make it included or like have it show up actually on your W-2 when they print it out at the end of the year.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good stuff.
So this next one you had listed was prioritizing the older spouse's HSA contributions if both spouses have one. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Yeah, so let's say both spouses have HSAs. Maybe one is significantly older than the other. And you have limited funds to contribute. Who should you prioritize? Whose HSA should you prioritize? You should always prioritize the older spouse's HSA, because they have the shorter time horizon to age 65, which is the age you were allowed to start taking money out of the HSA for non-medical expenses penalty-free.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Okay.
And then conversely, when it comes to distributions, you want to prioritize the younger spouse for the same reason, because since the older spouse's time horizon is shorter, prioritizing the younger spouses for distributions will result in more money in the older spouse's account making more money available for penalty-free withdrawals in retirement.
Okay.
So just a little planning strategy there.
And it ties into the age 65, which also comes in when we're talking about Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And Medicare was one of your, just a couple other like tips and tricks with Medicare.
Yeah.
So you're not just talking to the young folks today,
no.
It sounds like. You're
Older
answering
folks, I
that.
got you. I got you.
Perfect. Tell us about Medicare and HSAs, because Medicare is something you might see on your paycheck. It is something that like folks conceptually know about, but what's Medicare and how does that relate to, or how does HSA kind of come into the equation here?
Yeah, so Medicare is the government-funded healthcare option for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, when you turn age 65, you're required to enroll in Medicare. However, if you're enrolled in Medicare, you cannot contribute to an HSA.
Yeah.
Okay. So this creates a number of planning opportunities. Let's start with an example of, my birthday is October 21st. Let's mm-hmm. say I'm going to turn age 65, October 21st. I'm smart. I've done my Googling. I know that once I'm on Medicare, I cannot contribute to my HSA anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So as I get closer to August, September, I know I'm going to start the application process. So by October 21st, I'm on Medicare. And during that month, I will stop my HSA contributions and I should be good, right?
I feel like there's an ant.
This is where things get tricky. Just because on October 21st, I am now officially enrolled in Medicare, what the IRS does is it makes the coverage active 6 months retroactively.
Yep.
So
Gotcha.
They look at it as I was actually covered under Medicare April.
Yeah.
21st.
April of that
so if
year.
I've been making contributions to the HSA since then, I'm going to be subject to penalties.
And that excise tax, you got to run those suicides, right? Okay, so that makes sense. So we have to take like the year we turn 65 minus 6 months. That's when we've got to take into account like stopping contributions to the HSA.
Exactly. Now, there might be some scenarios where folks are working past 65. And there's a rule that if you work for a large corporation with 20 or more employees, you can defer Medicare enrollment until you separate from service.
Yep.
And that's fine, but you still just need to keep in mind that 6 month look back rule.
Mm-hmm.
When you do depart and enroll, just understand that you need to discontinue those HSA contributions 6 months before separation of service.
Gotcha. So this may be something too, where like if you have open enrollment and you have to choose for the upcoming year
mm-hmm.
to contribute to an HSA or not, that might be something you're considering where, you know, if you're born in June, you know, and 6 months before that's going to be January, we're not going to be able to contribute for the year. So you might as well not enroll in HSA for the following year. So you'd have to think about it, something like that.
Exactly. Exactly. And then there might be a scenario where somebody's working past 70.
Mm-hmm.
For a big corporation. Those who turn age 70, you have to apply for Medicare. It doesn't matter if you're still working at
Yeah.
that point. You must apply for Medicare Part A benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Once you do that, that enrollment is made retroactive 6 months. So even if you're still working or you plan to work past 70, those HSAs need to stop 6 to 7 months before turning age 70, or you're going to mm-hmm. be subject to that excise tax.
Contributions. We could still have them. That's the fun part, as we could still keep whatever's in there and
Correct.
Use whatever's in there. It's just contributions. Like we're.
Have to stop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're done.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's talk about contributions then. So maxing HSA contributions. There's some tips and tricks here that I know you can shed some light on.
Yeah, so we know life circumstances change. People get
Always.
Married.
Yeah,
yeah, people get married in the middle of the year. They get divorced in the middle of the year. They have children in the middle mm-hmm. of the year. And so that might warrant a change in their health coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Keep that in mind because that's going to inform what you're going to be able to contribute for the year. And HSA contributions, those are calculated on a pro rata basis. Okay. So, for example, if you had family coverage for the first 3 months of 2024, and then you switch to self-only coverage for 9 months, your contribution is going to be calculated proportionally to that.
For the 9 months out of the year. Yeah.
Exactly. So you'll get the family max just for those 3 months. Mm-hmm. So think of whatever it was last year, 8,300 times three plus 4,150 times nine, the 9 months you were on the self-coverage. That's the max that you can contribute for the year. Mm-hmm. Understanding that prorated formula is a great planning opportunity there. Mm-hmm. Also understand the concept of the last month rule and its benefits and pitfalls. So let's say that you had self-only coverage at the beginning of the year, and then you switch to family coverage in the middle of the year.
Yeah. Say you got married or had a kid.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So you went from being able to max the HSA out at 4,300. Now you have the opportunity to max it out at, sorry, it was 4,150 last year, then max it out at 8,300. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be subject to that prorated amount. As long as you keep that qualifying family coverage for the entire following year, all the way until December 31st, you can max out the HSA at the family max.
Oh, so if you're keeping the coverage, you're not immediately switching the coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. They tell you, like, with these benefits, it is a life event where you can make changes if you want, but I guess you don't have to make changes.
Right. Here's the framework and the way that I would think about it. So let's say in the middle of the year, your coverage decreases. Okay. Mm-hmm. You went from family coverage to self-only coverage. Mm-hmm. Your contribution limit is prorated.
Mm-hmm.
Opposite, your coverage increased. You went from self-only coverage to family coverage. And you maintained that coverage for the entire following year. You should take advantage of that last month rule and max it out at the family max.
Ah, I get what you're saying. Okay. I am picking up what you're putting down now. Gotcha. Yeah. Man, all these things that we talk about, we could say blanket statements like HSAs are awesome. And then they are, but it's also like you also have to know how the inner workings work or we'll be like messing something up and getting weird notices and IRS, you know, nasty grams and things like that. So
exactly. And this is why financial planning is so important and having the support of an expert to help you navigate these intricacies is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To avoid some stresses or some downfalls in the future. Mm-hmm. I think financial planning is so much about obviously planning for the future and making smart decisions, but also avoiding bad decisions or things that are wrong. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. And then just keep in mind with that last month rule, you know, you do have to keep the coverage for the entire following year. If you don't, you will be subject to that excise tax.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Gonna do some running. I'm gonna keep saying that to remind people. Okay. Anything left on maxing HSA contributions?
Nope. I think that's it.
Let's talk about the fun stuff. Let's talk about like long-term growth, the tax-free reimbursements. Why are we even using these HSAs? Why do we get so excited about them in planning? And it comes down to the taxes, like you're saying, like there's three different ways it's tax advantaged, and then it has the long-term growth opportunity. So I'll turn it over to you to tell us about that.
Yeah. So the long-term growth opportunity is the most missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. I was at a financial planning conference a couple of years ago. The speaker was doing a presentation on HSAs, and I recall them highlighting how there's a data point that shows that only 10% of HSA owners are actually using the account as a wealth building tool.
Mm-hmm.
Only 10%.
Yeah. And I think it's an education around it. It's like, well, I have it as a savings account for healthcare funds. So of course I'm going to use it for healthcare expenses. Right. Yeah. And that, you know, that's fine. Like if budget wise, if that's what we need to do, that's totally what that account is for. But we could also use it as a wealth accelerator, I guess you could say.
Absolutely. Most people underutilize their HSAs by spending it on immediate medical expenses. And that could be necessary in some scenarios. I don't want to discount that. Mm-hmm. But if you can afford to allowing the funds to sit there, invest them, and allow them to grow tax-free for future medical reimbursements is one of the most powerful things you can do with the HSA. And why is that? Because of healthcare inflation. Okay. Healthcare expenses now are not going to look like what they are in your older years. Expenses are going to be much higher. When I'm doing planning for clients, I'm using an assumption for healthcare inflation of about 5%. That is on average the long-term healthcare inflation rate. So if you're keeping your money in cash in that HSA, it is not keeping up with healthcare inflation.
Yeah.
And most people are going to need more money to cover healthcare costs when they're older and when expenses are likely to be higher.
Yeah. I tell folks that a lot because when we're talking about retirement planning and like how much you are going to need for retirement planning, we can, of course, think about the costs and our standard of living today. And I get a lot of folks that think that they're going to spend less when they go to retire. And a lot of times that's not the case because of healthcare expenses.
Exactly.
Because you are older, you are going to need more medical care potentially. And like you're saying, like the cost of medical care, like it does outpace standard inflation, which is a little scary. And that's why like saving and investing in these high yield, I keep saying high yield savings accounts, HSAs, these health savings accounts are so important. And trying to delay the use of those funds until later can be very important.
Exactly. I think Fidelity commenced a retirement study back in 2021 that showed that couples over the age 65 may need to spend an estimated $300,000 in healthcare expenses alone.
Wow. Yeah. So if you only have $300,000 in your 401k now, it's gone with your medical expenses.
There you go. Yep. It's, that money is spent.
That's already accounted for, and that's not going to, you know, feed you.
Exactly. And just to illustrate the how powerful investing the HSA. So say last year you made a $5,000 contribution to your HSA. You invested it in, let's say, a basket of ETFs, exchange traded funds. It grew at 7%. It's growing at 7% per year for the next 25 years. That $5,000 is now $25,000. And instead of using that $5,000 initially to pay for whatever medical costs you had at that time, you can reimburse yourself 25 years later when the account is bigger.
Yep. That's the other little hack here. So I think, yeah, I want to continue to talk about the growth, but also the little hack here too, is that you can forever keep those receipts for anything that you paid for that was qualifying. So if you had like a copay you had to pay today, that was $100, you save that receipt in, let's say, like a digital folder, like Dropbox or Google, something safe and secure. You can literally go and reimburse yourself that $100 25 years from now, like you're saying, and it's still tax-free because you had that receipt to go against it. But like you're saying, you let that $100 sit there and grow and grow and grow and grow. And now the account itself is so much bigger. So now you have more money to use for other healthcare expenses that maybe you have at that time, 25 years from now.
Precisely. Precisely. And you mentioned the word receipts. And that really underscores the importance of maintaining, saving those receipts and maintaining good records of all your unreimbursed medical expenses.
Yeah. The way I am trying to do it for myself is I do have a Google folder and I have a unreimbursed folder and I have a reimbursed folder because I have had times where I wanted to reimburse myself for medical expenses. And so the reimbursed folder, it is separated out by year where like I know in 2024, I reimbursed myself for XYZ. There's the receipt. I have the statement of the HSA in there or the annual statement or the tax document or whatever. So I have this little paper trail, and it doesn't have to be too extensive or too time consuming or anything. It's really just, you could do everything from your phone these days too. Like have the provider email you a receipt, download it, and just upload it straight into like your phone's drive. Or like I have the Google Drive app on my phone, which I think Dropbox has an app, Canopy has an app, like our software that we use for tax planning.
Yeah.
So yeah, maintaining those receipts is really important.
It's also important to understand when to start reimbursing yourself. At some point, you want to start reimbursing yourself for those expenses. You don't want to wait too long. HSA withdrawals are only tax-free while the account owner is alive.
Mm-hmm.
If that account owner dies and then the surviving spouse tries to use the HSA to cover those expenses when they were living, those distributions become taxable.
That's a good point to bring up.
But you want to keep that in mind if you or your spouse are in declining health, advanced age, and you want to avoid having those taxable distributions to heirs, let's start draining that account.
Yeah, that could be the first one to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And I want to come back to the growth on the tax just to kind of drill that down again. So
yeah.
The contributions that you make, they're tax deductible. So we got a discount kind of on our taxes for contributing to this account.
Uh-huh.
The money grows tax deferred and it's tax free upon distribution if it's for a qualifying expense.
Yeah.
So that's the triple tax benefit there that does not literally does not exist with any other kind of account.
No.
A Roth is close, right? A Roth, we contribute to it. It's taxable today, though. Like, we had to pay tax on whatever we contributed to that account. In the future, it's tax-free when we take the money out. But we still had to pay tax today. HSA, we take that part out. So that's why it's called the triple threat there with taxes. And that's why we get so excited about it. It's because it can grow and it's not ever touched by taxes. Like, the one thing ever that is not touched by taxes.
And that's exactly why when I talk to clients about the hierarchy of savings, at the top starts with the emergency fund, then maxing any employer matches to retirement accounts. And then the third on that list is HSA, even above maxing out the 401k. Because of those triple tax benefits, you're not getting with any other account. Again, that's why I started off the conversation by saying, I think the HSA is the most powerful savings tool you could have access to.
That's the only downside there is having access to it, right?
Yeah.
Because you may not have a high deductible healthcare plan. There's reasons why folks may not be on a high deductible healthcare plan, even if it's offered. Like, there may be more medical expenses that you're experiencing throughout the year where just a lower deductible plan makes sense for the budget over the course of the year for how much we have to pay out of pocket.
Absolutely. But even in that example, Megan, I think the numbers should be crunched.
Yes. Yeah,
and
definitely.
That's what I find sometimes with clients is they assume that because they're anticipating high medical expenses in a given year that they shouldn't go on a high deductible health plan.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes crunching the numbers to see if that's true, because if the benefits of the high deductible health plan with the HSA eligibility, all the benefits that go with it, it may outweigh those increased medical costs. That's why with clients, we crunch the numbers. When open enrollment comes every year, I have them send me their healthcare benefits, and I have a spreadsheet that I've created.
I was going to say, you have a little calculator, don't you?
I do. I have a health insurance calculator. I sure do. We estimate what their costs are going to look like in a high-cost year versus a low-cost year. Mm-hmm. Then we compare it to their different health plan options, and we identify, well, what's the best plan in that high-cost year versus that low-cost year? And then what type of year are you more likely to have? And sometimes in the high-cost year, the high-deductible health plan with the HSA comes out on top.
It can be surprising, when you're crunching the numbers.
Uh-huh.
Nice. Man, I'm excited for you to train all of our advisors on this calculator, by the way, now that we're talking about it.
It's my little secret, but happy to share it with you, Megan.
That's awesome. Well, let's talk about a couple other, there's a few more little tips and tricks here. There's a few things that you listed that I'm excited about, but I'll let you close it out with just a few other like qualified HSA funding distribution kind of strategies that are kind of interesting.
Yes. There's something you can do with your HSA. It's called a QHFD, a qualified HSA funding distribution.
Mm-hmm.
This is a strategy that allows you to move pre-tax money from an IRA to an HSA once in your lifetime. Okay, and now you're probably asking, why would I do something like that?
I know. I love this though, because I could think of a lot of reasons why.
Exactly. The best use for it is if you had some unexpected medical expenses and you have cash flow constraints, and maybe you have a sizable IRA where in the past you did rollovers from like old 401ks, 403bs into the IRA. Instead of tapping the IRA directly and being exposed to early withdrawal penalties, you can do this one-time transfer from the IRA to the HSA and then use that HSA to fund those medical expenses. Again, it provides a number of great benefits. You avoid the taxes and the penalties from directly withdrawing from the IRA. Then you get to pull that money out of the HSA tax-free for qualified medical expenses. One of the scenarios where I've advised a client to incorporate this was assisted reproductive technology. They were going through IVF, and most commonly, health insurance plans don't cover IVF. So you're looking at covering that stuff out of pocket. Luckily, IRS Publication 502 includes fertility expenses as qualified medical expenses. So I had a scenario where the client had a sizable IRA, and we did that one-time transfer from the IRA to the HSA, and they were able to use those HSA funds for IVF expenses.
That's really smart. Very smart. And yeah, a situation where it's like, okay, that money. Maybe if we had it in savings, it could have come from our emergency savings. It could have come from a taxable investment account we had. It may have gone on a credit card otherwise,
Yeah.
where all of those other options are not the best options compared to maybe this solution. And it's a one-time solution, but a really, really great strategy if you knew that this was something that you had in your back pocket.
Yeah.
Another reason I could think of, like, for this is IRAs can sometimes be pesky, where they did come from, like, maybe you had a rollover from a prior employer. Like you said, it's a
Yeah.
small amount. Maybe you weren't there for that long and you want to do maybe a backdoor Roth. We have to do a backdoor Roth because your income is too high or because you're filing taxes separately. Well, that IRA money is going to cause an issue, a pro rata
Yeah.
issue. Usually, what we suggest here, or there's a couple of things that we suggest here. One could be a reverse rollover where we roll that IRA into your current employer account. So it's not touched by that pro rata issue. But another solution, if the balance makes sense, like maybe it does make sense to move some to an HSA.
Yeah.
So that could be a way to avoid the pro rata issue when we have outstanding IRA funds when we're trying to entertain a backdoor Roth strategy in the
Oh,
future.
yeah.
Those pesky pro rata rules. Okay. We've learned some tips and tricks. We've learned some things that we did not know about HSAs, but I think we also highlighted some reasons why we truly love HSAs and we can really utilize them, or we should be utilizing them to the fullest of their ability. So some takeaways, I would say, make sure you know how much to contribute. Depending on if you have self coverage, family coverage, what your spouse is doing with their health coverage as well, make sure we know how much we should be contributing to not have to hustle and run for the IRS, paying some excise taxes. We want to make sure that we're being as efficient as possible. We're contributing through payroll when possible, saves us a little bit on taxes. And we're strategically using maybe the HSA that's appropriate for the older spouse or the younger spouse for contributions or for distributions. We are factoring in Medicare and how that affects being able to contribute to HSAs. So, coordinating that with our age, with our work situation, and with age 65 and age 70 when things can change there for HSAs and our healthcare coverage. We talked about maximizing the contributions, the last month rule, which is really important. There's calculators out there, the pro rata calculation for how much you're able to contribute if you're going to be between health care plans in the year. Long-term growth, we stressed, why it's so impactful to have this triple tax threat here with HSAs being completely tax-free if used in the right way or utilized in the right way, I should say. And then we talked about some interesting ways that we can kind of distribute, or sorry, not distribute, but
Fund the
there you
HSA.
go, fund the HSA. There you go. If we're in a cash crunch for healthcare related expenses, or we've got a small pesky IRA that we don't want to do the pro rata situation with, or we don't want to convert into Roth, maybe we can contribute or make that distribution for the IRA into the HSA, and tax-wise, it's okay. So we talked about a lot. Thank you so much, Kathleen, for breaking all this down.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thank you for having me once again, Megan.
Yeah. And if you're a client of Kathleen's, you know how thorough she is. So she's probably already had these conversations with you. And if you're not a client, if you're not a client of SLP Wealth yet, this is some of the an example of some value that we can bring to the table when it comes to just talking through things that you hear about all the time and how it could specifically impact you or how we could specifically tailor your plan for those topics in particular and implement them correctly, right? And strategically.
Absolutely.
But thank you so much, Kathleen, for joining me. Always a pleasure. I can't wait for our next topic, whatever that may be. We'll see. I know you're on the calendar for soon. But I hope everyone has a really lovely weekend. What are you doing this weekend now that you're out and about in Colombia?
I'm going hiking. It's kind of like my last hurrah. I come back to California on Monday.
Oh, nice.
Hiking, okay. One last fancy dinner, then I'm on my way home.
Oh, awesome. Well, I hope you close out your weekend really lovely. And I hope everybody else has a lovely weekend. We'll catch everybody on the next episode. Thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone.
What if you could get fiduciary financial planning specific to your profession that's student loan aware that could change your life for a price much better than you ever dreamed possible? If that sounds good to you, go to slpwealth.com/pod for a free, no obligation, 15-minute intro call with one of our own fiduciary financial planners to see if we could be a good fit for you. This podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered individualized investment advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, do not consider it a recommendation to buy or sell the investment. Seek first advice from a financial professional before implementing any strategies discussed. All investments involve risk, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Yay, compliance.